Yeah, somebody did text me a snake. The odds are, if you have a grandchild, or you have a child, or you are a child, or were a child, you've heard of text messaging. You know what it's about. Anyone who has a cell phone can send a text message to another cell phone. I want to give you a few facts about cell phones. Okay. The first text message was sent from a computer in 1992 in December. The message was, Merry Christmas. That was the very first text message. And then it took until 1995 when the average cell phone owner used less than one half text message a month. I mean, a half text message a month. Can you imagine if you had to get by on that today, kids? There you go again. See, you're getting the point. You're sending me a text message. Here. I'm going to do y'all a favor. Let me shut it off now. But today there are over 200,000 text messages sent every second, and half of them are from this congregation. And somewhere on the globe, every day there's 1.2 trillion text messages sent a year, and that's growing all the time. So we're definitely in a texting culture, and there's actually a lingo to text messaging, and I want to introduce you to a few of the terms. Let's see if the kids can get this, or the not kids. What does this mean? Happy. That's happy. See, you look sideways. Look happy. What's this one? Sad. That's right. It'd be easier to spell S-A-D, wouldn't it? But here's another one. Can you guess that? Yeah, that's right. Surprised. Let's do another one. Let's see. Question mark for you. Oh, I have a question for you. That's pretty easy. Let's get another one. CYT. What's that? See you tomorrow. See you there. Okay, next one. LOL. Or laughter. Right? Okay, let's do another one. PCM. Are you kidding? Go ahead, click it on. Please call me. Okay, you're not really good text messengers. Let's do another one. F-Y-E-O. For you! No? What does it mean? For your eyes only. I'm telling you, some of you parents, if you see your kids texting this, you may want to get rid of the texting plan. Okay, here's one for you. W-U-D. What is that? Yeah, what are you doing? And let's do one more. BFF. Best friends forever, right? Pinky grab. And it's concerning this last text that we're going to focus our sermon this morning. Defining a BFF, best friend forever. Using the relationship of Jonathan and David in the books of 2 Samuel, we're going to try to define what it is that makes us a BFF, what we're looking for in a BFF, and making Jesus our BFF. A while ago, you know, I asked Andrew, I said, you know, how do you like your roommates at the academy? And Andrew's listening this morning because he's stuck on base. Hi, Andrew. He said something that kind of creeped me out at first, because I never heard of that term before, BFF. I said, how do you like your roommates? He said, well, one of them I can picture being a BFF. I said, what's that? He said, best friend forever. Is that like a hunting buddy? And so I heard that term, and I realized that I got left behind in the lingo. And so let's try to identify what a best friend forever is. 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 15 through 18, 1. First of all, a best friend forever loves your soul. A best friend forever loves your soul. It says in 17 verse 57 of 1 Samuel, when David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took and brought him before Saul with the Philistine's head in his hand. Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, young man?" David answered, "I am the son of your servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite." Now it came about when he finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, meaning he loved David on a soul level above all. It is when you love somebody for the soul that they have that they are a prospect to be a BFF. 1 Peter 1 verse 22 and 23 talks about, you know, having a fervent love for one another from the heart, that it purifies our souls at that point, that love that we have for one another. Hebrews 13:7 talks about how the elders keep a watch out over the souls of the flock. They're to have a BFF perspective of the congregation, and you likewise also of the eldership. We look out over each other's souls. If we're ever going to be a quality BFF, best friend forever, we had better love the soul of another. But a best friend forever respects you as himself. 1 Samuel 18, verses 3 and 4. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, including his sword and his bow and his belt. And even though David lived in the palace of Saul, he really didn't experience what it meant to be a prince like Jonathan was. But Jonathan saying, "I want to be your best friend forever. I want you to stand in my robe, in my shoes, with my armor. I want you to feel like what it means to be me. You're royalty to me. As I am royalty, so are you." If we're ever going to be a best friend forever to anybody, we have to respect them as we would respect ourselves. Galatians 5:13 tells us, "For you were called to freedom, brethren. Don't turn your freedom into an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For as the whole law is fulfilled in one word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." James 2:8 talks about, calls it the royal law according to Scripture, "You shall love your neighbor as yourself. You do well." Do we want to be a good prospect to be BFF? Then we must literally love that person like we would ourselves. But a best friend forever also comes to your defense. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 19, verses 4 through 7. 1 Samuel 19, 4 through 7. Then Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul his father and said to him, "Do not let the king sin against his servant David, since he has not sinned against you, since his deeds have been very beneficial to you. For he took his life in his hand and struck the Philistine. And the Lord brought about a great deliverance for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood by putting David to death without cause?" Saul listened to the voice of Jonathan. Saul vowed, "As the Lord lives, he shall not be put to death." But Jonathan called David, and Jonathan told him all the words, and Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as formerly. See, Saul had a spirit of jealousy, a deep spirit of jealousy, because the women were singing, "Saul has slain his thousands, but David his tens of thousands." You know, Saul didn't like that. He wanted to be the king, and he was a king. But God had different plans since 1 Samuel 15, when Saul rejected God's command. And so he tried to have David killed. David was fleeing for his life. But Jonathan, his BFF, did something called intervening. He came to David's defense and said, "Dad, don't do that. He's a good man. Despite what anybody else is saying, he's a good man. Could you expect anything less from a BFF than to defend you when you're right?" 2 Timothy 4, verse 16 and 17. Paul said, "At my defense," this is toward the end of Paul's life, he said, "At my defense, no one supported me, but all deserted me. May it not be accounted against them." Paul didn't have a lot of BFFs there. He had Luke, sent for Mark. He really needed a BFF in his life, and that was Jesus. We're told in Acts 9:27, Barnabas was Saul's BFF. When the apostles didn't want to meet with Saul because he had a history, Barnabas played the part of best friend forever. He said, "Come here. Listen, guys, I done my research. He's one of us." He treated him like a BFF. He came to his defense. Imagine what would happen had he not done that. Proverbs 31, 8 and 9 says, "Open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all the unfortunate. Open your mouth, judge righteously, defend the rights of the afflicted and needy." God's going to judge us on whether or not we're BFF with people. We need to come to people's defense. That's the quality of a fine BFF. Best friend forever warns you when there's danger. 1 Samuel chapter 20, verse 35 and following, came about in the morning that Jonathan went out into the field for the appointment with David. He had a little lad with him, and he said to the lad, "Run and find the arrows which I'm about to shoot." And he shot the arrows, and the lad ran out, and Jonathan called him over. It was a secret encoded message to David that he was in danger. "It's over there." He ran over where the arrow wasn't. And David saw it. David says, "I'm in danger. Saul's still trying to kill me." Because Jonathan was a BFF, best friend forever. He had to warn David. He had to do it. Would you expect anything less of a BFF? Best friend forever. Are you going to warn me when I'm in danger? Don't call yourself a BFF if you're not going to say, give a message of danger to somebody. 2 Timothy 4, or let's go with another verse. Perhaps 1 Corinthians 10, verses 12 and 13. Paul says to the Corinthian Christians, "Therefore let him who thinks he stands watch out lest he fall. For there's no temptation taking you but that which is common to man." He's warning them. He's being a BFF. If a brother or sister is doing something they shouldn't be doing, best friend forever, you better go say something to them. If they're not living for Jesus, if they're going down a path of destruction, of hurt, of pain, who are we? Are we a BFF? We better be. A best friend forever will encourage you until the end. Isn't that what a BFF is? 1 Samuel chapter 23. 1 Samuel 23, verses 15 through 18. Now David became aware that Saul had come out to seek his life while David was in the wilderness of Ziph at Horesh. And Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David at Horesh and encouraged him in God. Underline that. Encouraged him in God. And thus he said to him, "Do not be afraid, because the hand of Saul my father will not find you. And you will be king over Israel, and I will be next to you. And Saul my father knows that also." So the two of them made a covenant before the Lord, and David stayed at Horesh while Jonathan went to his house. This would be the last time on this earth that they would ever see each other. Best friends forever. Wouldn't be long and Jonathan would be dead. But I love it so much when it says Jonathan encouraged him in God. David was fleeing for his life, hiding from Saul. He was public enemy number one, his face on all milk cartons. and his BFF goes, tries to help him. They'll encourage you till the end. 2 Timothy 4, 6 through 11. Paul says, I'm now ready to be poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand. I fought the good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Notice how Paul says, make every effort to come to me soon. For Demas hath loved this present world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. Crescens has gone to Galatia, Titus to Dalmatia. Only Luke is with me. Pick up Mark, bring him with you, for he is useful to me. Paul needed some encouragement. He really, really did. He was in a dungy prison awaiting death row for the crime of defending the gospel of Jesus Christ. Are you a BFF? Do you know a brother or sister who is hurting? Maybe going through a terrible struggle in their life? Be that BFF for them. Go to them and encourage them. That's the job of a BFF. A best friend forever will be missed. A best friend forever will be missed. 2 Samuel 1:17. This is when David finds out Jonathan is dead. I'm going to jump back and forth in this passage through 27. Beginning at verse 17, David chanted with this lament over Saul and Jonathan his son. And he told them to teach the sons of Judah the song of the bow. Behold, it is written in the book of Jasher. Look at verse 22. The bow of Jonathan did not turn back. This is a psalm. The sword of Saul did not return empty. Verse 23, Saul and Jonathan, beloved and pleasant in their life, and in their death they were not parted. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. Look at verse 25. How have the mighty fallen in the midst of battle? Jonathan is slain in your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. You have been very pleasant to me. Your love for me was more wonderful than the love of women. How have the mighty fallen, and the weapons of war perished. He was sorely missed. His BFF was dead. Died on the battlefield. And his greater mourning is clearly obvious. It's for the loss of Jonathan. Yeah, I'm sure he was sad that Saul died the way he did, but Saul wanted him dead. Saul was a tyrant. But Jonathan was his BFF. And now he's dead. Have you ever lost a BFF? Think about it. Add up all the BFFs you've ever had. Is one of them missing? I know you're thinking one. Might be a parent. Might be a child. Might be a friend from college, a brother or sister in Christ, somebody you love. Died and they were your BFF. And it hurts. And you miss them. And you think about them. That's because a true BFF will truly be missed. That's the nature of it. You remember in Acts 9:39, Peter went where Dorcas had died. And all the widows, poor women, were wearing garments at the funeral. And they were saying, look what she made us. Look what she made us. She loved us so much. Look at this garment. She cared for us and took care of us in a way that she'll be so missed. I was glad Peter was able to bring her back, at least for a period of time. You remember in John 11:33-36, Jesus saw them weeping over Lazarus. And the Jews came also weeping. And he was deeply moved in the spirit and trouble. And he said, where have you laid him? And he said to him, Lord, come and see. The most powerful two-word verse you'll ever find. Jesus wept. So all the Jews were saying, look how he loved him. I'm so glad he brought Lazarus back. I'm so glad that story didn't end in a tomb, but began in a tomb. Best friend forever will always be missed. And finally, a best friend forever is willing to lay down his life for you. That's a best friend forever. 1 Samuel chapter 20, verses 12 through 17. Another time that Jonathan was confronting his dad, Saul, about trying to kill David. Look at verse 14. Jonathan says, "If I am still alive, will you not show me the loving kindness of the Lord that I may not die?" It was very likely Saul knew his son was BFF with David. What would you do? Your son is BFF with the head of a terrorist organization? That's how he was viewed. Think that would cause a little friction in the family? But when Jonathan went to do more research, he was very likely taking his life into his hands. You know, a true BFF is willing to lay down his life for you. Dave Miller and I, when we went on a trip to Colorado, we were talking about, you know, the youth group. And I want you to know something. You as a youth group need to know this. Because half the reason we went out there was to, you know, design things for the youth, get information for it. And the topic came up, you know, about, you know, how we need to show love for our youth. And I asked Dave a question. We'll put you on the spot, brother. Okay. You remember the question. I said, would you be willing to lay down your life for any kid in the youth group? Remember what you said? You really need to never forget that. I hope that you have that love. That you're willing to lay down your life for anyone in this building. If it came to that. How can we be a best friend forever if we're not willing to die for somebody? Because if you're not willing to die for somebody, you're not willing to live for them. John 15:13. Greater love has no one than this, than one lay down his life for his friends. We know how that turned out. John 10, verse 11 through 15, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not the shepherd, who is not the owner of the sheep, he sees the wolf coming, he flees. But that shepherd, he sleeps right in the doorway. He lays down his life for the sheep, if that's what it calls for." Jesus deeply desires to be your BFF. For all mankind, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. He took our place on a cross. We were worthy of death, and he literally took our place. I know that there's a lot of times that maybe, you know, you might look at some of the leaders, youth, and say, "Oh, well, they're just kind of crabby or something." Or we might look at each other and say, "I don't know if they like me or not." If we get anything right in this life, it better be sending that message. Brother, sister, I'm willing to lay down my life for you. I'm literally willing to do that. So if you want to have a best friend forever, 3 points. Number one, develop these qualities in yourself. Make sure that you're bringing something to the table. Number two, seek out people who are doing the same. And number three, make sure that Jesus is your number one BFF in everything we do. He knows all about our struggles. He will guide till the day is done. Did you know there's not a friend like the lowly Jesus? No, not one. No, not one. I have a closing thought for you in the invitation. Let's look at it. Here's a text message. What does it say, Doug? It says, Jesus loves you and had to die for your evil. Wow. Let's go to another text message. Huh. What will you do? Huh. Let's see. Change your heart to Him. Be water baptized and live for Jesus today and the rest of your life. Wow, okay, let's go on to another one. Jesus Christ wants to be your BFF. Jesus sent a text message when He emptied the cross, or he emptied the grave. Did you get the text message? I know that's the excuses we use. I didn't get the message. Well, guess what? I just pointed out the message that you missed. Did you get the message that Jesus wants to be your BFF? Because He does. And if you want to respond this morning, if you want to put Christ on in covenant and live for Him the rest of your life, not only today, but the rest of your life. If you want to be, as the passage Dave read, friends forever with God, you need to respond this morning. Answer the text message that God so loved the world, while we stand and sing.